Your Preparation Station with Donna Miller is on the air. Tune in for insight and encouragement for living a more sustainable, back-to-basics lifestyle. No matter where you've come from or what the future may hold, we hope each episode will encourage you with topics, guests, and stories that inspire your journey towards self-sufficiency. And now, the hostess of Your Preparation Station, Donna Miller.
Welcome to Your Preparation Station. I'm your host, Donna Miller, and I'm very glad to be with you again today. We have a special guest who comes from a state that is very near and dear to my heart, from the state of Alabama. I spent a good deal of my child-rearing years in Alabama, loved the families and the people I got to connect with, so I had kind of an article come across my desk one day about the things that are going on for preparedness, and reached out to connect with this entire entity, and was blessed to be able to reach out and connect with John Mason. He's going to talk with us today about some things that are going on, some things that Ready Alabama has rolling out in the month of February, so hopefully you can act quick. But of course, if you hear this later, there's probably things going on that he's going to talk about ongoing throughout the year, so I hope that you will connect with him. I'm going to make sure that I have a good connection here, and we'll get started. John, do I have a good connection with you?
Sure do. Hey, Donna.
Awesome. Great. Thank you so much for calling in. Rather than completely read your bio, I'm going to tell everybody they can read the full complete bio on the website. But basically, you are the Director of Service Alabama for Serve Alabama at the Governor's Office for Faith-Based and Volunteer Services. Tell us a little bit about that. What is that branch of the Governor's Office?
Yeah, it's a very unique office, and I kind of give everybody my elevator speech, which is supposed to last 30 seconds, usually lasts a couple of minutes, but I'll keep it down. But what we do, we have a long title for our name. We are the Governor's Office of Faith-Based and Volunteer Service in Alabama, but it really boils down to the Office of Volunteerism for the state. So essentially what we do is we administer national service programs for the state of Alabama, and that includes AmeriCorps programs, which are essentially domestic Peace Corps programs. So they're member-based, and nonprofits and churches and groups like that tap into that as a resource. So we have that connection to the state of Alabama as kind of one piece of what we do. Second piece of what we do is we connect with veterans ministries. We have some specific faith-based initiatives that we kind of work with in the state, and one of them would be serving veterans through, you know, congregations of all denominations. So we're working on projects in that world. And then this other piece that we're talking about today is the fact that we administer the Ready Alabama campaign, which is a disaster preparedness campaign. And the way we were connected with that is we are the lead agency in the state for volunteer and donations management after a disaster. So you have something like our 2011 tornadoes or Hurricane Ivan or Katrina, our office kicks into gear, and we're the ones that work from the state level with Salvation Army, the Red Cross, with Lutherans, Baptists, Scientologists, you know, faith-based groups, nonprofit groups that come in to serve. We are that partner agency in the state that works with those groups. And so out of that, after Katrina, it evolved into some disaster relief funds, and it also evolved into disaster preparedness, which is where the Ready Alabama piece is.
That's awesome. It sounds like you guys cover a wide spectrum of streamlining all those people that come to help, either before, during, or after a disaster. That's awesome.
Yeah, we do. And a huge part of that is the volunteer donations management piece, where we try to, when volunteers come in to help, we help the small communities that are affected by, let's just say, tornadoes. You have a community like Phil Campbell in Hackleburg, Alabama, hit by an F5 tornado in 2011. The town of 1,200 people, the town destroyed on a Wednesday. By that weekend, they have 2,000 volunteers at their doorstep ready to help and work, but they're still in a very immediate recovery mode. So we come in and step in and help them manage that kind of onslaught of volunteers, as well as the donations that come in too.
Well, because actually a big crowd of volunteers can kind of throw a wrench into what might be going on if there's not someone there to help organize that.
Absolutely. It can be chaos, very well-intended chaos, but people showing up in flip-flops and shorts and, you know, walking through debris fields and things like that. And yeah. So we're there to help them connect with agencies that actually have projects and have plans. So they get something out of it. They don't feel like they, you know, felt this compassion and this rush to go help and then kind of be disappointed. So we help mm-hmm. them connect with organizations that are actually doing specific things, and it helps everybody.
That's fantastic. Makes everything a lot more productive.
Mm-hmm. Very
wonderful.
Much.
Well, now you're basically your historical work. You have been a meteorologist in Tuscaloosa for 18 years.
That's correct.
And Birmingham. Tell me how that actually helps to fit into your position. You've been in here since 2011.
Well, it again, you know, talking about the agency, you have the national service component, which has nothing to do with meteorology, but you have the disaster preparedness piece, which has kind of everything to do with as a broadcast meteorologist working for, you know, a local television station. You spend your days on the sunny and 72 degree days. You spend those days at the Kiwanis Club. You spend those days at the you know, with the second grade at the elementary school. You're all over the place, and you know what you're talking about, besides, you know, how a tornado forms, is kind of what to do when that type of weather threatens. And in the state of Alabama, I don't think you have probably a more diverse weather market than you do in central Alabama, because you're going to talk about hurricanes mm-hmm. in the summer. You're going to talk about winter weather, which you go back one year ago and you had the great Birmingham, Atlanta snowmageddon, people, you know, stuck in schools overnight from the ice and winter weather. Mm-hmm. You have that. Of course, you have tornado outbreaks. You have flooding. So preparedness is just the essence of kind of what you talk about, you know, 365 days a year. You could talk about preparedness like you do football, really, yeah. in Alabama, if you kind of get down to it.
And I'm sorry to laugh so hard on that one, because football is a big topic. I'm telling you what, it's in Alabama, if folks don't know, it's a religion, honestly, I think.
Yeah, it is. It is. It is. And you're one or the other. You're either, you know, Alabama or Auburn. And so you work all of that in. As a matter of fact, our preparedness day that we have coming up, we have, and it's going to make some folks mad, we have Big Al, the mascot from the University of Alabama. But Aubie from Auburn had a scheduling conflict. So it's going to maybe look like some favoritism, but we've got to explain that, you know, right off the bat. Or we're gonna
yeah, it's a good thing
mad.
You put that out there, because otherwise you might turn yeah. some people away. Exactly.
Absolutely.
When we moved to Lower Alabama, we were kind of cornered to pick a side, and because we worked in community service, you know, it wasn't, I'm joking, it was all in good fun.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
It is all in good fun. I know households that have both, so it's, you know, I know it's all in good fun. When we were moved there, we were kind of, okay, you got to pick a side. My husband quickly went, Florida State.
Whoa, so, okay.
So at least he was upsetting both at the same time.
That's right. That's equal opportunity. You know, that way you could probably still work and live in the community, picking something like
worked.
That.
We there were close
go.
Enough to Florida State to call it. I mean, we were in Lower Alabama.
Yeah.
So,
that's,
you know,
brilliant.
It was a brilliant move on his part. I was very proud of him, because everybody knew. And, you know, our kids got to pick out later on what they felt was more important. But, you know, as moving in there as adults, we had to pick. We weren't on one side of either one. So
here's the thing. At least you had a choice.
Mm-hmm.
When you're born in Alabama, you're kind of born into wherever, you know, whatever allegiance you're born into, or you're disassociated.
Right.
So, but it is all fun.
A lot of newborns leave the hospital with certain shirts on.
There you go.
They were tagged from the beginning. Seriously.
It was chosen for you.
And you're right about Alabama having one of the more eclectic natural disaster type maps, because people may not realize, you know, from Mobile on, you can really be affected by a hurricane that comes in. And, you know, maybe just that little bit of a coastline hits the Gulf, but that hurricane doesn't follow coastlines and map lines. It just hits everything in its path for hours of a drive on up. Hurricane Opal mm-hmm. knocked out where we were back, so that was a long time ago.
Yeah, 95 or so.
Yeah, like for 10 days we were without power and water. So we were in rural Alabama in the middle of, you know, 2 hours drive away from the coast. So it had an effect on us. Trees were uprooted, tornadoes came through. And there are not too many states that are affected by literally almost every weather-formed emergency, and Alabama happens to be one of them. You have a busy job.
We do, and we're even just slightly frightened by the fact that we're, you know, when you look at the New Madrid Fault for earthquakes,
yeah.
You know, it can extend into north and northwest Alabama. We haven't been there yet, but you know, there's really a little bit of everything. But but even with the this is kind of slightly off subject, but when hurricanes affect Louisiana and points west of Mobile, Alabama becomes a sheltering hub for evacuees. So there's kind of a role, no matter what goes on in the Gulf, you know, for what's
right.
going on here.
Right, and that's true. I have to say, I think it speaks a lot to the people of Alabama, very resilient and community-oriented people. My heart is still in Alabama. I check the weather. I'm still so connected with the folks that I spent those years with in Alabama. So I think the fact that they know something might happen in any given season, you know, you are in a great position to help everyone be prepared to help each other. So I think that's wonderful.
Well, you know, but talking about preparedness, with anything, and I know this is what you probably preach and talk about all the time, but just complacency, it's just so easy for that to settle in.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, talking about hurricanes and the coast, I mean, you were coming up on the 10th anniversary of Katrina for, you know, the Gulf Coast. That was 2005. 2004, we had our kind of devastating direct hit in Ivan. Their Mobile, Pensacola area, we've really basically, and it's a blessing, it's been 10 years since we've been affected by a major hurricane, but I know, and we know, and we see that, you know, preparation and just awareness of it, it just slips over time if you're not dealing with it.
Yeah, if it's something you can't put in front of people's faces, and you want to proactively encourage them to prepare rather than scare them into reaction, because they never really do it very well that way.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure you see the scared reaction right as something's coming. You know, people clear the grocery store shelves, people suddenly freak out and there are gas lines everywhere. And, you know, you see the reactive action to an oncoming threat. But right now, when it's quiet, it's your job, and often mine as well, to say, hey, do some stuff now before you have to go into reaction mode, and you'll be that much better off.
And that's a big part, you know, as far as what we have with Ready Alabama. Here's our deal in our state. We have really very little money for preparedness. You know, many preparedness programs, they may be federally funded, they may be specific campaigns, but those, you know, funding streams for widespread, you know, I turn on the TV and I see the PSA all the time, or I'm in the, we had a huge campaign 5-6 years ago in Alabama where, I mean, Jumbotrons and then in the football stadiums, you know, talking about preparedness. That comes and goes with the money. And so our philosophy here is to take advantage of social media and traditional media. And so connecting with you, connecting with other groups through all means possible, you know, it's just a matter of it's using time versus money resources to get the message out. But what we really want to do with our social here is be event specific and jump into the conversation, you know, prior to, because with hurricanes specifically, but even winter weather and tornadoes, you know, typically there's a lead time. There's not a lead time for a specific warning for a tornado, but 2 days in advance, you kind of know that there's a setup for the potential for severe weather in a particular area. So at that point in time, that's the point where we want to jump into the conversation and push the preparedness reminders at that point. So we're doing that through social media, and we also have a partnership with Lamar Advertising, which is one of the nation's leading billboard companies, and mm-hmm. they have digital billboards across the state, and so we've partnered with them in advance of specific potential weather issues. Their digital billboard network for the zip code that weather might affect will start promoting preparedness for that specific event. So in advance of Isaac back in 2012, the Gulf Coast Digital Billboard started with prep messages 48 hours out. And so that's through a partnership. That's the kind of thing that we're trying to do to make it, you know, less about, okay, on this particular Thursday in the month of August, I heard a preparedness message. Well, that's the one time of year I heard it. But it's more effective if I hear it 2 days out or 1 day out from a potential event, even if it's a bust.
Right. Even if it doesn't come to its full-blown fruition of a disaster, you've at least, people have short-term memory for the most part in a lot of ways. If they're not thinking about this, that's a good way to get it out to the masses, to the public. I think that's brilliant. I love that. Well, I want to give a couple websites as everybody's listening so that they can kind of connect. You were speaking about your the social media, and even if you don't live in Alabama, but you know somebody who does, I would go ahead and encourage you to connect with their Facebook page, which is facebook.com/ReadyAlabama. Alabama reaches so many states around it in the South that are affected by some heavy-duty natural disaster potentials. It might be a good idea for even people from Georgia and Florida and Tennessee and Mississippi to all connect with Ready Alabama and on their Facebook page, as well as go by and take a look at the website, readyalabama.gov, G-O-V, so that you can kind of see the generality of the area, because, like you said, it's a haven, too, for people that need to run from one other area to the other. I think it would behoove folks to check it out and connect. I know we've liked the page, and we're in North Carolina. It doesn't matter. Yeah. I'm just attached to Alabama.
So. Well, you know, one thing we realized, and I live in Tuscaloosa, and you and I were talking earlier about the tornadoes of 2011 in Tuscaloosa. People don't realize that we had 62 tornadoes on that day. There was one in Tuscaloosa, an F4, two other locations had F5s in Alabama, and we had 9 other F4 tornadoes. So we had more. We had 25 years worth of F4 tornadoes touch down in Alabama in one day, and we're a place that leads the country in F4 tornadoes. So, in other words, it was generational, just kind of what happened. But the fact that it hit Tuscaloosa, Alabama, you talk about connecting with other states. You know, half the students, over 50% of the students at the University of Alabama are from out of state. So people do connect with our state, particularly through the universities and the visibility of that, you know, from other places, and they check and they want to know what's going on because they do have students or they have relatives and they have just a vested interest in, you know, in some of the communities in Alabama, that would be Alabama and Auburn, that are have awareness outside of our own borders. So people jump in for that too.
And I think I think they should, definitely. Well, you guys are doing some proactive stuff, spreading the word about preparedness with students in the state. I'd like to hear a little bit about that and anything you've got coming up.
Yeah, we have two specific things actually coming up. One this month in February, and then one in March. Our February event is Ready Alabama Preparedness Day, which is a kind of a statewide day for disaster preparedness, and we move this event around from city to city. We've basically been a part of it for 9 years now, and we're going to be in Birmingham on the 20th of February at Regions Field, which is the new minor league ballpark in downtown Birmingham, which was just voted, I think, the best minor league ballpark in America. It's an awesome venue downtown, right next to a huge downtown city park. It's beautiful, and we, on the 20th of February, which is a Friday, we have, right now I think we have 500 to 700 kids signed up from the Birmingham area, and we're probably going to end up with close to 1,000 there coming through, looking at first responder vehicles, talking to the National Weather Service office out of Birmingham. We have the 4 major TV stations there with their storm-chasing vehicles with the lights and the radars and all that kind of stuff there in each meteorology team, each group, they're going to take time with each class that comes through to talk specifically about different dangers. And all of this is a part of Severe Weather Awareness Week, which is that week in Alabama. So we're kind of taking that Friday as a kind of culmination of everything, and in Birmingham having this huge event for school kids to come through. So We're excited about that. One other quick event we're having, which is in March 16th through the 20th, we have a youth preparedness camp that I know is probably the gold standard for those types of events in the country, that's held at the U.S. Space and Rocket Center in Huntsville. So, you know, we have beaches in South Alabama, but we built rockets that took, man to the moon in Huntsville, Alabama, and that Space and Rocket Center serves as a host for a week-long youth preparedness camp for sixth graders that go through a complete program, a CERT program modified for them, and kind of culminates at the end of that week in a giant mock disaster, which is usually like a helicopter or plane crash, and includes water rescues. We have first responders from the Tennessee Valley that donate their equipment, their time, the gas, the area hospitals, nursing schools. They all come out, and really these kids run an entire disaster response on the final day of that camp, and that's coming up in March. So we're just doing the best we can to help the kids prepare in Alabama.
Well, one thing that because I did work with kids in summer camps in some form for ages, 20 years, I guess, what I always found was when you can get the kids passionate about something, they take it home. Mm-hmm. And most parents, not all, but most parents kind of pick up on it and go, or the kids will be kind of dogged on a topic of where's our kit? Where's our first aid kit? Where's our go kit if we have to leave? They can be very persuasive. Children can be persuasive.
Absolutely. It's awfully convicting when your child is asking you those questions. And back to a quick 2011 story, I live in Tuscaloosa, and the tornado was about a mile south of our home or where we live. And so we were incredibly blessed as far as not being in the path. But, I spend all my time talking about prep kits. I couldn't find a working FM radio. I couldn't find a charger. I couldn't find, we had one flashlight with batteries. I mean, it was, and I don't want to say embarrassing, but it was just convicting, to just not be prepared for what followed.
Yeah. You're probably more prepared than most people, but not as prepared as you'd like to be.
Exactly. No.
Yeah.
We still had gaps, and we still had needs, and we still had things that, were going to kind of keep us safe in the aftermath, that we were scrambling, and we didn't have to be.
Yeah, and I think that's good to have some of those test runs, and thank the Lord you got through it unscathed.
Uh-huh.
But I think even those test runs, you can think through as many scenarios as possible, but when there's a minor something happen, or even major, and you get through to the other side and go, here's some places we can tweak things. And kids are great about bringing that stuff up in front of your face a lot, because they think differently than grown-ups do. We kind of fall into the status quo, everything's fine, I'm really busy with other stuff. And when you kind of empower a child to be free to think about these things like you're doing at the Be Ready Camp or at the event in February, the Ready Alabama Preparedness Day, you kind of give them that freedom to think outside the box of everything is normal. And then they can open up their lovely little mouths and say, hey, Mom, hey, Dad, I want to know you're safe. I want to know I'm safe. Do we have this? Do we have that? And can I help? I think that's just a fantastic thing, because our kids can really motivate us to realize where we have those gaps and keeping them safe.
That's exactly right. I have a quick thought on that too, and just some actual stories from kids from April of 2011 during the tornadoes, and that really is kind of a line in the sand for Alabama, where again we've always had these types of events, but you have to go back to 1974 to have something as widespread and truly devastating for the Southeast in our state. So, but you have kids talking about how I have grown-ups saying that their kids begged and pleaded for them to go into their safe place on that day. And we're literally almost, we're saved by that to some extent, because, I mean, typically the kids, and maybe the mom gathers the kids and they go, well, the dads in Alabama that I know, they go to the porch and look outside.
Yes.
you got to go see what's going on. You're not gonna. I'm not gonna go hide in here. I'm gonna go confront. You know, kind of whatever's happening. And that kind of ended after that day for a lot of folks, because I think just a sad reality set in about how, you know, we can have every communication tool in the world. We can have every, you know, iPhone, Android, whatever. We can have outdoor sirens. We can have an indoor weather radio. We can have everything. But if there's a mile-and-a-half wide tornado with, 190-mile-an-hour wind coming your way, none of that matters. You just better be in the best place you can be.
Exactly. And kids can bring it back to the simplistic of, hey, just get safe.
That's right.
Because that's what they see as paramount and most important, that they're parents and they are safe and not, I got this, I can do it, I can go against this. No, you know, the kids will beg you into some safety. So that's very, very well stated and a very good reminder. Well, we're going to take a real quick break here and have a little word from our sponsors, and then we're going to come back and talk about some of the things that you guys actually do during a disaster, and maybe some advice for others to help them get prepared for one. So we'll be right back with John Mason, and we'll continue our conversation.
Are you looking to have ducks, geese, chickens? Boy, do we have something to share with you. Stop by ranch-coop.com. These folks build some of the most beautiful handcrafted coops for small areas as well as the farm. They are so easy to put together. It took us less than an hour, and they're shipped right to your door. Stop by ranch-coop.com. Wonderful people to deal with. Beautiful coops that you can use for backyard and homestead fowl. Ranch-coop.com.
Do you have your free digital subscription to Prepare Magazine yet? If not, then hurry over to preparemag.com and start getting each monthly issue sent directly to your inbox. It's easy. All you have to do is go to preparemag.com, enter your name and email address, and you're subscribed. Consider signing up for the premium membership for past issues and exclusive resources. You can even subscribe to the beautiful print version of Prepare Magazine. Visit preparemag.com and choose the option that's most valuable to you. Prepare Magazine, encouraging, empowering, and enriching your journey.
Your preparation station is on the air.
Thank you for staying tuned through our sponsors. I'm Donna Miller, and I'm here with Mr. John Mason. He is the director of Serve Alabama, the Governor's Office of Faith-Based and Volunteer Services. We've talked a little bit about some of the things that the whole office has done and plans to do and why they're created, and I would like for you to connect with their website and Facebook page. You can go to readyalabama.gov and go to facebook.com/readyalabama, or just search Ready Alabama on Facebook. You'll find them, I'm sure. Like their page, stay connected, see what all is going on. They have a couple of great things coming up in the spring here to empower families and kids to be proactive on their preparedness and kind of get a feel for what it takes to be as best prepared for a disaster as possible. But John, let me ask, what does your agency do, and how do they participate during a disaster, exactly like before, during, and after? What do you guys get involved in?
Well, I love the way our office name-wise is kind of laid out, and that's the way I try to explain it. We run the Ready Alabama campaign, which I basically explain as the before, the preparedness. And then we are, as an office, our website is servealabama.gov for our overall office, and that's the name of our organization, and we have it that way because it's very hard to answer the phone as the governor's office of blah, blah, blah. So that's hard. So we're Ready Alabama, and we're Serve Alabama. So that's exactly what we do before, during, and after storms. So before, we really work through social media. We have the specific days, specific events, and the website and the pieces that we put out, and they're available. But social media engages, so we get in there for the preparation through that. We have a PIO. We have an information officer that basically mans that and works that beforehand. And then literally, I mean, we turn the page from preparation to response, and we turn into Serve Alabama. So we take the Ready Alabama hat off, and we go into Serve. And so that service role that we have after a storm is what I've kind of talked about earlier, where We continue to remind people about safety, you know, through the READY program, the safety after a storm, you know, power lines down, don't go into areas that you're, you know, not able to go into, things of that nature, just that kind of prep. But the service role is connecting at that state level with the nonprofits and the church groups, faith-based groups that come in to repair and serve, you know, after storms. So we're working with the Red Cross, we're working with the Southern Baptists, we're working with Catholic Charities, we're working with, you know, go down the list. So we work there through our Emergency Operations Center in the state of Alabama. So we're kind of on the floor, and you have that war room kind of thing where all of this activity is going on, and we're over there kind of with individual services and the volunteer groups. So we're coordinating the groups that are coming in. And I'll be honest with you, it's been again, we had to go back from 2005 to Katrina and Ivan all the way up to 2011 before we had a huge kind of more than one community type event for the state of Alabama. And if you think about what happened in that time frame, I mean, basically you're saying pre-Twitter and Facebook, post Twitter and Facebook for those two pieces. And so disaster response was absolutely changed by social media. So 05 had nothing to do with what 11 looked like. And
we call
11 our first social media disaster, essentially. And it was that way in two ways. It was, you know, a disaster in the social media area, and we literally sat there with everything in place, what we're supposed to do, what we're trained to do, in response from a volunteer donation standpoint, and we watched everything absolutely take the highway around us through social media. So everything we had set up really did not apply in 2011. And so then you had, for volunteer donations, you had the ability for one church in Northeast Alabama to say, hey, we need diapers ASAP, 15 exclamation points behind it. And then you have millions of people wanting to help, and you have no idea whether they need 10 diapers or do they need 10,000 diapers. You have a guy with a truck in Illinois saying, I'm going to bring diapers your way. So you have this incredible, you know, efficiency problem with, you know, vetted needs. What's the nature of the need? What's the scope of the need? What, you know, you have this communication tool that everybody's paying attention to. But you have no process to say, well, you know, we can check that off the list. We have our 10 diapers now. I'm sorry, gentleman who left Illinois 6 hours ago, that you're in Tennessee now and we don't need them and we really only needed 10. You know, there was just a whole scope and perspective issue, you know, with the entire process. And so we have been really trying hard to learn some best practices and kind of what, you know, it's an incredible tool, but what we've decided and what we've made a point to do is we're going to jump into that conversation. That's why we've invested in social media, to basically, literally, almost answer everything that applies to what we do with a best practice, with an idea, with a, if that makes any sense, with some help. I mean, essentially, there's no, you know, the state doesn't control what anybody does on the ground, and all disasters are local, and that response is local, and that's the best response. But but with social media, those disasters are not local anymore.
That's true. You know, there's a blessing and a curse almost at the same time. You alluded to it with, hey, you know, you're driving across country with a truckload of diapers, and we were done with that 3 days ago.
Exactly.
There needs to be a central hub, and that's kind of what Ready Alabama and the Facebook page can be, is for people to, instead of necessarily, you know, jumping. And I think that's a great thing. Social media, it's the bane of my existence sometimes, and sometimes, you know, I forget there is a good point to it, and you explain that very well. They put out the cry for help, and people are ready to jump and help. But, you know, if you send 17 semi-trucks with diapers, it's kind of overkill.
That's right.
Know? So,
and it's a very, I mean, the tough part in 2011 was just our perfect example. We saw so many resources. Misuse is not the word, but misallocated. Just the allocation of resources was just not very efficient, because you were running on emotion and you were running on, you know, quickness to respond and things like that. And So it was just different.
So hopefully you guys will be developing it more into kind of a communication hub to where people can get accurate information of needs or send in accurate information of needs. And then it's always easier. it's awful like when you were in school, you have 14 people talking about a topic and it becomes bigger than life. Mm-hmm. Well, if they have one spokesperson, it becomes much more clear. So hopefully
You
guys can be that spokesperson to coordinate the volunteers, which are, you're completely right. There's much more effective from community and humanitarian volunteer to jump in. They don't have red tape to go through quite as often. They can get there, but they do need that organization. Otherwise, they're walking all over each other.
That's right. I mean, and also, I'm just reminded of, I was actually reading something about, there's a town south of Tuscaloosa called Moundville, Alabama, and mm-hmm. they had a devastating tornado in, I don't know, the 20s, 30s, something like that. And it hit like a train on the train track, and it literally was 9-10 hours, maybe even a day later when the next train came through before they could even, you know, clear the tracks, send that train on to Tuscaloosa or Birmingham to let people know that this happened down there. So, you know, you're talking about a 1-2 day process before anybody just even knew to kind of organize and come down and help
mm-hmm.
versus instantaneous information now about when, you know, events that happen in communities. And so, you know, it is a blessing, but it's also a recipe for chaos.
Yeah, it is, because you can't get, you may have people that are there to help in the way of the help. And
exactly.
I've interviewed people with FEMA before. I've interviewed plenty of other people who have reached out to help in disasters, and they say that is kind of the number one frustration, because it's good to see everyone, the outpouring of help, but getting that organization to make it effective is paramount. And so I think you guys are kind of putting that out there and putting it in place ahead of time. So anyone that's listening, if you know something going on in Alabama, this might be your stop to find out the reality of, is it still necessary? It may have been posted 6 hours ago, but that need may already be met.
That's exactly right. At the end of the day, I mean, you just want to kind of streamline, maximize the effort, and make sure that the effort is, you know, you just want to best use, you know, those resources.
Right. And, we keep talking about Alabama because that's where you are and that's what we're talking about going on. But this type of thought process can be used in any and every state to help.
Absolutely.
To help make it an effective outpouring of service and help, find a central hub that you feel like is communicating all the needs clearly and updating when the need's been met, because, you know, that it, you can bring gallons and gallons of water, but if they've got all they need, which that's a bad example because you always need more water, but,
true.
That's still, you're hauling something that maybe what they really need is blankets at the moment.
That's true.
So.
And in Alabama, we had lots of coconut water left mm-hmm. in 2011 that nobody wanted to drink. But somebody sent, you know, truckloads of coconut water, and it may still be here. I don't know. But no offense to coconut water fans, but after disaster, nobody wanted that. But I'm sure, you know, I'm talking, again, like you said, specifically about Alabama because that's our experience. But I know Sandy. I know Sandy, Hurricane Sandy, that communities in the Northeast, they, you know, in FEMA, they learned from 2011. And we in our office learned even from the BP oil spill. We responded to the BP oil spill as an agency in helping coordinate volunteers, which was the weirdest volunteer coordination ever, because you had thousands of people wanting to put on spacesuits and walk up and down the beach and clean off birds with oil on them.
Mm-hmm.
But you had an area that was absolutely, you know, kind of a quarantined area for only, you know, trained experts to come in.
Mm-hmm.
So, and also you had a donation situation where you had a community devastated economically by what happened, but you had no one wanting to donate because you actually, it was not an act of nature.
Right.
So, very weird situation. So
that is kind of, that was, I remember that one very well as well. It was kind of a hodgepodge of emotional reactions and, you know, where to lay blame and what to, mm-hmm. how to react. Do you react when you lay blame or do you not? Do you sit back and let them be accountable? That was difficult, but still, nonetheless, the nature around there and the habitat and the environment had been affected, and
that's
people
right.
wanted to help. So
exactly.
Yeah. Well, now you guys have spent so much time helping people learn what to do to get prepared. I want to give you the moment to kind of maybe give out a little bit of advice. What do you think people can do on their own to prepare for a disaster?
Well, what we try to do here, and this is one of the things over several years that really kind of has evolved with our philosophy, we try. I mean, I'm to a point now with, again, 140 characters on Twitter, things of that nature. You know, if something comes to me and it's more than three paragraphs, I'm going to have to really make an effort to read it. You know, so we mm-hmm. want to boil this thing down, essentially. And so what we try to stay with here is that preparedness kit, the emergency kit. We try to do it in two phases. Number one, you have to have that preparedness kit for whatever it might be. I mean, it's a car kit for winter weather. It's a home kit for power outages, whether it's, you know, any season. So there's that kit that includes the first aid supplies. It includes, you know, things for special needs that might be in your household. It includes, you know, just that basic supply necessity to stay, you know, 72 hours in place. And at the same time, that's great that you have a kit, but if you don't have a way to receive information about, A, what's coming, and then, B, what's happening after it happened, then that kit means really kind of nothing. So mm-hmm. so we try to focus on having the kit, keeping that kit updated and prepared, but also identifying the way that you will receive information, warnings, watches, plus information afterwards, which kind of is, we call it part of the kit too, where you have to know where you're going to get this information. You have to know where how you're going to communicate, you know, before, during, and after that storm. And that's things like texting instead of making phone calls with your cell phone. That's having extra chargers and like the Mophie and the different groups that make the battery chargers for cell phones that help mm-hmm. them last, and just things like that. So you have to have a communications tool, and then you have to have that kit. That's kind of where we kind of boil it down.
That's true, and you alluded to texting versus trying to call, because it is easier to get a text out than it is to get a phone call out. So the ability to text, I'm one of those people that fought the smartphone forever. I just didn't want to have to get one. But I have to admit, now that I have one, I see the usefulness of it, as long as it's a tool and not a time.
Oh,
master.
I want to fight it too. Yeah, I'm with you. No. It's love-hate too.
Yeah.
It's like lots of things. But it has revolutionized communication. And then we have to think of, and what we try to focus on is, in Alabama we have so many rural areas. We have low broadband penetration in Alabama. We have poverty issues in Alabama, obviously. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we have to look at, you know, that's great if we go on TV and say, use your smartphone, download this app, this is great.
Right.
You know, I don't know what you're talking about, is what some
right.
people are going to say. And
they are.
And so, you know, just we try to be mindful of the different populations out there and just making sure they have a way to receive that too. I mean, one small thing is just, you know, outdoor sirens are for outdoor use. So many people go, well, I've got a, you know, there's sirens in town. I know about warnings. That's not made for you cooking dinner or asleep at night. That mm-hmm. that tornado siren is not there to wake you up for that. So, you know, you have to have a NOAA weather radio battery operated to know you're going to get a warning.
Right.
You know, at the end of the day.
You're exactly right. Many of the times when we were in Montgomery, we would hear the sirens going off. But when we lived in rural Alabama, lower, even lower, we were so far away from any town. I mean, our town had 205 people, and when we left, it was 200. I mean, it was that little.
There you go. Wow.
had one flashing yellow light. Loved that town. Loved the people of that town. But there's no way you knew anything was coming unless you actually could look outside and read the signs.
That's exactly right.
You had to have your NOAA weather. Often television wasn't working if the weather was getting that bad, so you're not getting it that way. Mm-hmm. So, you know, some of those things that you're talking about for the kit, low enough tech, but still high enough on the communication level. That's still very important. So very good information.
That's where we stay. We try to stay there because we, you know, over time we still, even with volunteer donations, I mean, it's a little bit like, it's no different than the volunteers and the people, you know, your neighbor. If a tornado strikes the town 10 miles from you, you know, first instinct for a lot of folks is, well, I've got a chainsaw, I'm going to hop in my pickup truck and I'm going down there.
Right.
And that's the same thing we battle within our agency, is we just have to make ourselves stay where we are because you so desperately want to get down and go, Calvary Baptist Church, yeah, we'll help you get those 10 diapers, you know, or you know, whatever we happen to be working on. But we have to pull up and go, hey, if we just stick to making sure Alabama is ready communication-wise and also kit-wise to deal with whatever comes their way, you know, we're good. That's what we're here to do.
Right. You've equipped enough people to get through the disaster so that when the dust clears, then organizing how to help out can take over.
That's right.
Jumping ahead too quick or just jumping in on your own may or may not be as effective. So just get yourself, your family safe and get through it. And then, you know, there will be time afterwards to help out, definitely.
Listen, we learned, and it's the same case I know for hurricanes, but for the tornado, 2011 tornado, we, through our office, we were actually a recipient of a FEMA grant for disaster case management, and
mm-hmm.
that grant actually helped 7,000 different households develop recovery plans, and they were low-income households. They were usually seniors, special needs, things of that nature, so that's mm-hmm. kind of where that happened to be. But there are still cases now being worked in Alabama with people looking for funding to rebuild from the tornadoes, and we're coming up on
wow.
4 years, and there's still people recovering from Katrina. So
yes,
there are plenty of opportunities to serve.
Mm-hmm.
Years
it doesn't
after
just clean up 3 days after it's all
That's
over.
Right.
So there will
That's
always
right.
be the opportunity to serve. First and foremost, keep yourself and your family safe, and then look for ways to serve after that. So I think that's a very good lesson. Well, John, I appreciate you coming and taking some time this morning, and I'm hoping this will help spread the word about the wonderful things you're doing at Ready Alabama, well, and Serve Alabama, both. And I love how it kind of segues one into the other. You know, get ready, and after you're through it, we're here to serve.
Then we're here to serve, yeah.
I think that's awesome.
Thank you so much. I've enjoyed this, and thank you for the time. This is just, I know this time is valuable, and to be able to talk about this and share is a wonderful opportunity, so we appreciate that.
It's definitely been my pleasure. I hope folks will connect with the website, find out when and where you're doing different things, and hopefully maybe we can even come down to one of the events, leave North Carolina and come visit Alabama again. Would be a joy, and be there to help out and support you guys as well.
Definitely invited, and I know any excuse to get back to Alabama, huh? Works out.
You're darn right.
I hear you. That sounds great.
All right. Well, thank you, folks, for listening. Please connect. The website has been connected below, actually all of them, the Facebook page, the Serve Alabama and Ready Alabama. Connect there. And if you have questions, I'm sure they've got places where you can contact them, find out how you can get involved post and pre-disaster, and just help them be as organized to serve the area as possible. For now, this is Donna Miller from Your Preparation Station. I'm signing off and saying God bless, and keep prepared, but keep enjoying the journey.
This has been another episode of Your Preparation Station with Donna Miller. We would love to hear from you. Please connect with us at yourpreparationstation.com and on Facebook. Tune in again next time for another encouraging episode. Until then, keep growing and finding joy in the journey.